The commission that was put together to look at school safety debates how to handle mental health. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. The Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Safety Commission met again this week, and they discussed the possibility of grading schools on how their safety programs are set, and even about best practices for getting information to parents during shootings. But they also faced a lot of angry parents. The district and other agencies in Broward are now facing lawsuits. WLRN's education reporter Jessica Bakeman joins us to discuss some of what happened at yesterday's meeting. Also, Sweat Records has been a fixture in Little Haiti for a number of years now. That's about to change. Owner Lolo Reskin will tell us about the future of the store. And this weekend is Record Store Day. We'll chat about our favorite albums, some new music that South Floridians are listening to, and why vinyl sales are still going strong. All of that today on Sundial. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for listening. Well, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School Safety Commission met this week. This is the state commission that's been investigating the Parkland school shooting and coming up with solutions to prevent such massacres from happening again. Now, this week, there were Parkland families filing lawsuits, and the commission debated things like how to look into the issue of mental health. WLRN reporter Jessica Bakeman was there yesterday and joins us now. Jessica, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Lewis.
You were at the meeting yesterday. What was the group gathering to discuss? What were they talking about mostly this month? Kind of give me a picture.
So a few different things. They looked at school districts and how they report data about the crimes that take place in schools. This came actually after a report from the Sun Sentinel that said that school districts across the state were underreporting the crimes that were taking place on campus, or basically what they talked about at the meeting yesterday was that they really had big questions about the accuracy and the consistency of that data. So that seems like that's something they're going to look at in the future. They also had some really tragic discussions about the process of notifying a family member that their loved one has been killed or injured, and also reunifying family members when, you know, when the shooting took place last year, the Marriott nearby sort of became this like command center, and a bunch of the students were there and parents were trying to get to their students. So they heard from some of the family members of people who died about what that process was like for them. And then, like you mentioned, they talked about mental health and specifically what is their role in looking into mental health issues. They essentially decided that to do a deep dive into Florida's broad system of mental health care and how all of that works is not something that they think is for them to do, but that they are going to focus more specifically on what mental health care looks like in schools and how schools work with mental health providers in the community.
And some of the families, Parkland families, were present yesterday?
Right, like I said, for that discussion about the reunification and the notification. So the family of victim Gina Montalto was there. Fred Guttenberg, whose daughter Jamie was killed, was there. Also Debbie Hickson, whose husband Chris Hickson was the athletic director. He was killed. And they spoke about what it was like when they were told what happened. They talked about having to wait many hours, up to 10 hours, where they were just, they didn't know what happened and they were waiting to find out. And they were in this hotel, and they eventually, the families one by one started being called into rooms. And so then the families who were still waiting were hearing like the screaming and crying coming from those rooms, which was really, really difficult. And basically the law enforcement officers on the commission were saying, well, we know that there's so much anxiety and so much stress around it, but at the same time, we don't want to give you inaccurate information. We don't want to tell you your loved one is or is not alive when we don't know the answer.
And then the families were saying, we'd rather have some information, even if it's wrong, than have nothing.
Yeah, and I think they also said that, you know, there should be counselors, grief counselors, victims, advocates there on hand so that the families had somebody to process it with out loud.
There were also lawyers representing families of students and staff killed or injured filing lawsuits. Who were these lawsuits filed against?
Right. So this happened separate from the meeting, but also yesterday there was this announcement that there would be at least 22 lawsuits, if not more, being filed from the families of victims, not only of the people who died, but also the people who were injured. And the lawsuits are targeting the Broward County School Board, the Sheriff's Office, Scott Peterson, who is the school resource officer who hid instead of going into the building, and then the campus monitor, Andrew Medina, who was the first to spot the shooter on campus and recognized that he was a threat but did not call a code red, as well as this Henderson Behavioral Health, which is an organization that provided mental health services to the shooter.
Why are these lawsuits being filed now?
So what the attorneys were saying was that they've been working behind the scenes with the school board, with the sheriff's office, trying to figure out some kind of settlement. And in fact, there's a process that's already underway with the state legislature. So if a local government has to come to a settlement because of a wrongful death or something like that, if the the amount of money of the settlement is more than $300,000, that has to be approved by the legislature. So Senator Lauren Book has already filed bills in the legislature that would create a compensation fund for victims' families. And basically, it's kind of just waiting there if the settlement agreement comes about. But the attorneys said that they've been working to get that, and that they alleged that the school board was actually lobbying against that legislation. Now, the school board says that's not true. We helped write this legislation. We're in favor of it. So basically, one of the attorneys said, if we can come to an agreement and we can come to a settlement and get it passed, then these lawsuits could go away.
I'm talking with WLRN's education reporter, reporter Jessica Bakeman. She was at the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School Safety Commission meeting yesterday. As we just heard, 22 lawsuits being filed against the Broward County School Board, the Sheriff's Office, and others for mistakes that led up to the shooting. Again, this group meets monthly, talking about a lot of different issues when it comes to safety on school campuses. All right, so this week's meeting, as you mentioned, a lot of different topics to discuss, school safety being one of them. There was an idea to grade districts by whether or not they were complying with school safety requirements. That wasn't very popular with a lot of people.
Yeah, so just to clarify, the commission was meeting monthly last year. So far, it seems like they've been meeting every other month going forward. But they were talking about school safety and basically looking at how are school districts complying with these laws that they passed in response, that the legislature passed in response to the Parkland shooting, to see are they making the changes that they're supposed to be making. And so they're frustrated with the fact that some of them aren't, or some of them aren't doing it as quickly as they want. And so they're saying, okay, you know how school districts and schools already have this grade from A to F that's about their academics. Maybe they should have another one that's about safety, so that if they got an F, they would have to own it, like, we're failing at keeping students safe. That was the idea. But the chair of the commission, who is Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri, raised a concern about that, saying, okay, if we say this school district is an F at keeping their students safe, that could make that school district a target.
Right. Well, where did the commission leave on this item? What's next?
I think they're still talking about it. And basically, the commission doesn't have the power to, like, make a law, but they do have the authority and really the charge from the legislature to make recommendations for potential laws. And I think if they do make a recommendation, the legislature is going to take it really seriously. So I think they're trying to see how things play out. But they're saying this is something that they might consider recommending in the future that could become a law.
And yeah, thank you for clarifying, too, is that in the first, before the session, they were meeting monthly and they were to put together a report for legislators.
Exactly.
And so now, of course, everything meeting from this point forward is just, I guess, to see what else they can do or what else has to be improved.
Right. The commission exists for 5 years and they are allowed to put out other reports if they want to. But the most immediate thing they had to do was put out that initial report. So, yeah, now they're trying to figure out what's next. And that was like that question about mental health that came up, like, what is our role in going forward and trying to make further recommendations?
What else came out of this week?
You know, one thing along the lines of the mental health that I thought was interesting was they were saying, okay, so obviously this is along the backdrop of we had the two apparent suicides recently from Parkland survivors, and we have parents and teachers and students saying our mental health needs were really not met after that. And so it seems like a weird time for the commission to say, you know what, actually mental health is really not our primary focus. And yet, you know, a couple of the members were saying, maybe what we should do is ask somebody who has more expertise and understands this issue better to take it on. And I was thinking about that because, you know, there are several law enforcement people on the panel. It's a pretty big law enforcement presence. You know, there aren't any teachers on the panel, for example. So I think that it might make sense for someone else that maybe has more expertise on mental health issues in schools to look at this, but I don't know who exactly that is and if there's going to be the urgency to continue forward on that issue.
Anything surprise you about, I mean, over these last couple of times they've met, you know, things that they haven't discussed, or did they just feel that's not something for them to talk about, kind of like mental health?
Well, I actually, last night I went back to the original legislation and looked over, like, what was the charge? What did the legislature ask them to do? And they basically said, okay, at a minimum, we want you to look at the system failures that led to not only the Parkland shooting, but also other mass violent incidents in Florida. And they wanted them to create a timeline of what happened. They wanted them to look at the shooter's life and his experience and, you know, the different things that happened to him along the way. Like, for example, the mental health services that he got, like, were those effective? Weren't they? The behavioral threat assessments at the school. So that's like this process at the school where the educators and the mental health people and law enforcement get together and they say, okay, is based on this student's behavior, do we think this student is a threat? And so they were trying to figure out what went wrong. And I think they did a lot of that. They also looked at, you know, the communications issues that came up between police. Like, if you remember the Coral Springs police and the BSO, they were not able to communicate. They both responded to the shooting when it happened. And so they did look a lot at a lot of the things that, like, actually happened, everything that led up to that day. And then I think as far as the bigger issues, they've really just done kind of more broad surface level discussions. And it is interesting to look at something like this, where when a shooting happens, the first thing people say usually is either we need gun control or we need better mental health treatment. And those two areas are ones that they really haven't been looking at in detail. They've really focused more on school safety, hardening, and of course, you know, their controversial recommendation to arm teachers.
All right. So coming back to the lawsuit, just briefly, just to wrap things up here, if the legislature doesn't reach a conclusion by the end of the session, then just the lawsuits.
What happens?
Yeah, the lawsuits move forward.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, one of the attorneys was maybe trying to be optimistic and saying, hey, you know, the legislative session, everything happens at the last minute, you know, there's still 3 weeks left, so it's possible that something could happen. Another one of the attorneys was, I guess, feeling less optimistic, saying this isn't going to happen this year, so this is going to drag on. We'll see if they are able to come up with something. I mean, they may have some pressure from the legislature, some pressure from the governor. But if the lawsuits go forward, I think that what we can expect is that it will be a lengthy process. You know, they will try them, probably. And if they don't come up with settlements, then they would be tried. And, you know, the attorneys were saying this would involve hundreds of people, if you think about, like, all of the jury members. And it could potentially cost millions of dollars more if the juries come back with verdicts that say the families are owed a lot more than what the settlements would have been. And also it means that the victims will have to do depositions and, you know, they'll have to relive what they went through.
WLRN's education reporter, Jessica Bakeman, again, talking about the Marjory Stoneman Douglas Safety Commission meeting again this past week. You can follow that story and Jessica's work at WLRN.org. Jessica, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Lewis.
All right, still to come, a popular record store in Little Haiti might be moving. We're going to find out what's going on with the future of Sweat Records. And, of course, it's Record Store Day this weekend. We'll be talking about all of that coming up. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN, and thanks again for pledging your support. Well, Sweat Records has been an institution in Miami now for over a decade. Co-founded by Lolo Reskin, the store has been that space for independent music lovers across South Florida to find their favorite records or find stuff that they have never heard before. So there was a story that came out recently that they may be moving out of their little Haiti spot. You know what? Let me just bring in Lolo Reskin joining me now here in studio. By the way, also just to mention, too, there's also she's got her label, Sweat Records Records, and that record label associated with the store. One of their bands on the label, Dracula, is coming out with their first full-length album. That's this week or next week?
Next week.
So, and then, by the way, we're going to be talking about Record Store Day here in a little bit as well. But Lolo, first of all, great to have you back.
Thank you.
Let's clarify. So there's a story that comes out this week that says you're moving. You're moving out of the Little Haiti spot.
Well, out of the particular one, but we are dedicated to staying in Little Haiti. We've been there for over a decade and we love it. And, you know, we love the community. There's so much happening, lots of art and culture, and we're proud to be a part of that. And we are dedicated to remaining a part of it. So yeah, we announced this week that there's some big changes coming. We can't say too much yet, but we did put out a really cool survey to our friends and fans and family that's still up, that people are welcome to respond to. And we really wanted to know what people wanted from the next iteration of Sweat Records, because one thing we've always been about is adapting to our customers' needs, because you can't just think one things are one way and just go ahead. You have to listen to your audience. You have to listen to your customers. And that's how you stay in business for over a decade, we've found. So we put out the survey. We got some amazing answers back. And overwhelmingly, people want more live experiences. They want to hang out at the store. They want a place to come and like do work and listen to music and discover new things. And we've always been part shop, part community space. So our plans going forward are just to amplify that, take it to the next level.
When the story came out, though, I'd imagine probably people are right on texting you or tweeting you. Like, what? What's going on? What's happening? We saw it. We're like, wait a second. We had booked you for the show and we're like, we just found this out.
Well, you know, things change all the time and that's the only constant is change. So we're all about going with the flow and adapting and, you know, we're doing whatever we can to ensure that Sweat is viable and able to serve Miami's music lovers, which has been our mission from day one, going well into the future.
Now, you said you want to stay in that community, but we've reported about it. We've seen this happen. Let's start with this. What's the dynamic of that neighborhood that's made it such a wonderful place to be in?
I mean, obviously diversity. There's everything from, you know, Churchill's Pub, where we originally moved because a hurricane destroyed our first location. They're this legacy cultural institution that's been there since 1979. And thankfully, in our time of need back in 2005, welcomed us into their space. And we, you know, patiently waited until the space next door where we are now became available. But, you know, everything, the Little Haiti Cultural Center has some incredible programming. There's, you know, just so much going on in the neighborhood, so many cool youth programs coming up, laundromat art space, and all kinds of great neighbors, Villain Theater. So, you know, it's this cool little growing community, and we love it. You know, we're very happy there, we're comfortable, and we want to stay.
Now, Little Haiti, too, is now in that situation where what you've seen in Wynwood happen, mm-hmm. or Edgewater, where it's now starting to get very expensive. And a lot of the artists and a lot of those folks who were there to try to, you know, to expand and grow, now they're getting pushed out. And Little Haiti seems to be next. And so, I mean, you know, is there a concern that, look, at some point it gets too expensive, now you got to get out and go somewhere else?
It's absolutely a concern. I mean, you know, we see what's happening. We see the for sale signs around. And, you know, we hear a lot on the ground about what's going on in the neighborhood. We still are confident we're going to find our next space within Little Haiti. And, you know, since we've made the announcement, we've been reached out to by a variety of people across all stripes of the real estate industry as well. So we're looking at a lot of stuff and we'll announce the next step when we set it.
Now, clarify too, because as you had mentioned to me, it's not like you're closing for a long time and maybe you'll show it. No, it's a transition.
Yeah. I mean, like with the last move, you know, we were only closed for under a week before we were able to pop back up in the new space. And, you know, we're really confident that we're able to reinvent Sweat with all of its quirks and personality and coziness and welcoming feeling into whatever, you know, physical building we inhabit next.
When you're able to tell us the story,
we'll
you're
be back.
You're coming back in here to tell. I'm talking with Lolo Reskin, co-founder of Sweat Records, currently in Miami's Little Haiti neighborhood. Okay, Sweat Records. A few months ago, you launched it. You were in here telling us about it. This is an independent record label connected to the store. One of the bands included on the label that was part of our Live from the 305, by the way, the folk duo Dracula. Tell us a bit about this new album that's coming out next week, as you said. And, you know, Doris and Eli, and again, we spoke with them. Fantastic group, but this is one of the first ones for the label.
Yeah, this is our first physical release. Our first single with them was in our estimation, a huge hit. It was on NPR Latino and then was named in NPR's Best 100 Songs of 2018, which is massive. Iggy Pop played it on the BBC. So we're thrilled at the response so far. We think they're an incredible group with a timeless sound and a very universal appeal. Beautiful voices, beautiful guitar, and playing incredible songs. Like, what else do you need?
When did you first, how did you find them?
They've played around the art and music scene in Miami for over a decade. They've actually been around a while, but they've never really had a proper label or management. And we love them so much. And we basically came to them and said, we'd love to help you. And they were like, wow, great. Nobody's ever tried to help us in this way before. So we're thrilled to be working with them. The album was recorded with DJ La Spam at his incredible studio in North Miami. Have some amazing guest musicians on it, including Eli's father, my father. And it came out so good. We're so thrilled with it. It comes out next Friday on vinyl and cassette, digitally everywhere. And we're also even selling a t-shirt that if you buy it, we'll give you the tracks.
Let's listen to one of the tracks included on the album. The album, again, Descripción, right?
Descripción.
Yes. Oh, I'm going to get that. Let's listen.
Tu cabellera brillaba con el sol. Tus verdes ojos con la luz del amor. A tu.
You know, Lolo, I mean, it kind of sticks with Dracula's, you know, style, that folksy, haunting sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a cover of a 70s Colombian duo called Elia y Elizabeth. And part of what's so great about Dracula is, you know, they're these young Latinx, early 30-somethings from Miami, but they have this incredible taste that goes from Peter, Paul, and Mary to Mexican folk songs and just these really beautiful pieces. And their selection is part of what makes the magic. And when they perform, they sit in chairs and face each other. And there's this really beautiful contact between them that you can sense, and it's a joy to watch.
I wonder for you, I mean, because, you know, you spent all these years building this institution, Sweat Records, and now you're a label. So mm-hmm. It's just extra. First of all, you don't look stressed, but I bet you've got to be, as now you're a label. So what's that been like for you?
No, it's amazing. We have a great team and we have a local plant that's making records and great artists to work with, great visual artists and designers to work with. So the fact that we have so many incredible people supporting us, so many contacts in the music industry that we've built over the years, and people who've sort of been waiting for us to start a label, you know, we're happy and proud of this record. And the response we've gotten from all those folks in our universe has been great. And basically now we just want to unleash it into the world.
And what's the party that you got planned? You talked about shirts, too, t-shirts. But no, what's the party you got planned for the release?
Sure. So next Friday at Floyd, which is a nice, intimate venue on 11th Street next to The Ground, another great venue, we're hosting the release party. They'll be performing live. Eli's dad will be doing his, quote, Spanish cowboy Roy Orbison stuff to open the night. Our friend Jesus Rodriguez is going to be playing some gorgeous vinyl. He's one of our favorite customers. He's got an incredible record collection. And it's just going to be a beautiful night, and the album will be for sale. And we're happy to let everyone know it's also going to be available at every Books and Books and at the Pam Shop. And people will be able to access it online as well. So we're just happy that everyone will get to hear this album that we've been having on repeat in our own worlds for the last few months since it got made.
And of course, you know, as we mentioned, we got the chance to speak with the two performers from Dracula on live from the 305. You can always find that at WLRN.org. Go back and listen. That was one of my favorite conversations. So they performed for us here in studio. They really are a lot of fun. Lolo Reskin, again, co-founder of Sweat Records, now music producer with the label Sweat Records Records. Find out more on our social at WLRN Sundial. She's sticking around because we're gonna take a quick break, come back, and talk about Record Store Day, which is coming up this weekend. I'm coming, by the way.
Yes.
I'm coming. I'm going to be there. So, yes. Again, we want to say thank you to all of you who have pledged your support to Public Radio. We're going to come back and talk about Record Store Day. And I want to know from you, by the way, if, you know, your favorite album. I want to know your favorite album. And I want to know, you know, what are you listening to right now? Find us on social media at WLR and Sundial and tell us about your favorite album. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. During the spring membership campaign, I'm Luis Hernandez. Again, thank you so much for your support. So Saturday, April 13th, that's Record Store Day. Mark the calendar. What are you doing on that day? You're going to go to a record store. The retail holiday started more than a decade ago now, and it's become a day for musicians to release new albums on vinyl. It's time for record stores to open their doors up and get people in and have a party. So we're still talking with Lolo Reskin of Sweat Records. Also joining us is Sean Kays, owner of Radioactive Records, a little bit further north of us. Sean, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
And by the way, Radioactive Records in Fort Lauderdale. Do you celebrate Record Store Day? We'd love to hear from you. Find us on social media at WLRN Sundial and let us know, are you still buying vinyl? What's your favorite record store story? I, you know, being a Gen Xer, I loved back in the day, always go to the record store back then. Vinyl wasn't nostalgic. It was what we bought, that or cassettes, and I had a lot of cassettes. So share your story with us again at WLRN Sundial. Lolo, let me start with you. You know, I'm wondering, how important are in-store sales compared to digital? We're such a digital world, but you still see a lot of fans come in.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we tackle the physical side of things. And to us, we see vinyl as the enduring physical format for music. It's outlasted all the others. It's resurged, like, in a way that one ever anticipated.
This isn't a fad. It's been around for a little while now.
Yeah, and a lot of genres never stopped, but now it's back in the mainstream. Every movie, commercial I seem to come across, there's a record player. Captain Marvel, they're dropping a needle on a record. Every movie. And so, yeah, records are super popular, and they've been that way since 2006 now. That was sort of when they say the resurgence started. But, you know, to us, it's as enduring a format as books are for literature.
And Sean, real quickly, I mean, you know, how are you doing it in a digital age?
Well, I think there's enough people out there who like to come to a physical shop and not be stuck at their computers. I think people are computers enough of the time. So it's so refreshing to walk into an old style music shop where the people who work there know about all kinds of music. And I think that's one of the main attractions. That and the fact that when you listen to music on vinyl, you're generally listening through it through speakers rather than through earbuds or headphones. And so it's a more social way to listen to music.
So usually there's a party that goes with Record Store Day. There's a lot of events. I mean, it's almost like, I mean, in the retail business, it's almost like Christmas, right? This is the big day for you guys. So real quickly, tell me about some of the parties that you have going on. Sean, let me start with you. What are people going to be doing with you guys on Saturday?
Well, people start lining up. The first guy generally gets here about midnight.
What?
People start lining up about 4 o'clock in the morning or so. So at about 6, we've got somebody bringing coffee, because I'm sure people are going to need that. And then throughout the day, we'll have various DJs doing touch and tag. DJ sets all day. And we generally have at least one live music set. I'm not sure if that's happening this year or not. But we're doing a panel consisting of Bob Perry, which most people know from Blue Note Records, mm-hmm. and the guys from Y&T, and Shane Eason, who is a professor at FAU. And they're just going to be, I guess they're just going to speak for a few minutes about the state of the retail music business in the retail age.
You know what? And so, I want to get to that in a second, too. I want to talk about that in a second. But real quickly, Lolo, it's always a party with you guys. What's going on? But really, wait a minute. People line up at midnight?
People line up real early because the first people in line get dibs on the best stuff.
Oh, okay.
Much.
Well, yeah. I'm coming, but I'm not coming that
No,
early.
You don't need to.
No.
No, like all the stores, we have to sign a pledge saying that we're going to abide by all the official RSD rules. And the rule is you can't open before 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Okay. So that's why people line up to get there for the 8 a.m. opening. So we're doing that. We've got DJs in the store all day. We've got all kinds of giveaways and fun stuff and tote bags full of goodies. And then our big party is next door at Churchill's Pub from 12 to 6, daytime thing. All ages welcome. We have 5 killer local acts across a bunch of different genres. Richie Hell, Susie Analog, Palomino Blonde, Florence and Normandy, and Butterfly Snapple. 5 great
wow,
acts.
That's great.
Yeah, we love all of them. We're so excited to have them all on our stage and to let everyone have a chance to come see them during the day. So no late night and no cover, and it'll just be great.
All right. Yeah, no, I'm not. It's Saturday. I'm not getting up that early, but I'm coming. I want to be there. Again, talking with Lolo Reskin of Sweat Records and Sean Kays of Radioactive Records in Fort Lauderdale. Saturday is Record Store Day. Again, Find us on social media at WLRN Sundial. We'd love to hear your what was the first vinyl you had. Maybe you've got vinyl now. You know, share with us your favorite story growing up, going to record stores. You know what, Sean, you talked about you're going to have this panel, this discussion about, you know, what is the future of record retail? And so, I mean, let me ask you, what do you think is the future, you know, in this digital age? How do you keep it going?
Yeah, I think what Lola said is kind of true. You know, people rejected vinyl for what was supposedly a better format, CDs. And what's happened throughout the history of music is that a better format comes out, the older formats disappear. Well, vinyl records never truly went away. And long about 2000, 2001, we started playing nothing but records in my shop, and people seemed to love it. And that's how we built our business from just trying to give people what they want. And it turned out to be the same thing we wanted, which was to listen, you know, to more vinyl records rather than be trapped in the CD mode.
And Lolo, you know, I mean, because we've talked about this before too, is that it went away, but also the plants that can print them went away. A lot of them went away. So it's not as many as before, but I mean, I saw the last story that I found was that sales of vinyl still climbing,
mm-hmm.
You know, still digital is the thing, but they're still climbing. Is there a future, or is it just, it'll always be a nice little part of the, you know.
It's a huge future. The industry is definitely paying attention. People, like the distribution companies and the record plants, are all working at max capacity to like deliver as much vinyl and make as much vinyl as possible. A couple years ago, started up the first vinyl manufacturers like global conference that has happened since basically the 70s. So the fact that there's a manufacturers conference, there's, you know, tons of vinyl at all the major music conferences at South by Southwest, there's panels on it, and et cetera. I mean, it is a big industry. People are investing money into it. There's new build record machines. Before, you had to find an old one and dig up an old person who knew how to fix it. Now there's brand new machines that pump vinyl out. So, you know, and there's all kinds of cool tricks and colors and variations you can do on the packaging and the art. And it's just really a great creative format, and people are running wild with it. It is awesome.
Record Store Day is coming up. It is this Saturday, and as Lolo told us, stores open at 8 o'clock. I guess people are going to be lined up outside early in the morning. I'll swing by, yeah. But I'm just Saturday. I like to stay in bed a little bit. Lolo Reskin, again, of Sweat Records. Sean Kays of Radioactive Records in Fort Lauderdale. And again, Record Store Day is Saturday. Lolo and Sean, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Have a great Record Store Day.
Thank you. We'll see you there.
Thanks so much.
All right. And again, we'd love to hear your story. Share with us, you know, your record store story. Share with us your favorite vinyl. If you still got vinyl, maybe you went out and got a turntable. You haven't had one in a while. I got to go and get one. Find us at WLRN Sundial. That is the program for today. Thank you so much for your support. Thanks for listening to Sundial. Have a great Friday, a great weekend, and Sundial will be back on Monday.